that song. It's time to tap your toe. And of course, call us in. Call us, 514-790-0800. Call to speak to Walter Assey, president of Vernovco. Ask him your questions for all of your home improvement needs. I'm Joanne Brackes. Happy to be with you today to take your calls. And of course, your text messages, same phone number, 514-790-0800. Remember to include your name if you are texting us. Hello, Walter. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm very good. It's been a very busy day, a busy week. We had Halloween for our little guys. One of your kids went.
One of my kids, yeah. I didn't go trick-or-treating this year, but it was such a beautiful day.
It felt like we were in a movie. It was like a Steven Spielberg film. It was just like perfect weather. You know, like I still remember growing up here in Canada on Halloweens that were so cold where you had to wear your snowsuit on top of your costume. So everyone was just dressed up as a Canadian child in the end. You couldn't see the costume.
Actually, if anything, you look more ridiculous because you have all of these things hanging around.
Exactly. You're wearing like a witch's hat, but your ski suit. Anyway, so hope everyone had a fantastic Halloween and that you didn't have too many tummy aches because of the candy. We already have some calls, 514-790-0800. Keep them coming in. Jim, we'll start things off, I think, with Jerry called in first. Jerry, can you hear us?
Hi.
Hi, Jerry. Can you hear us?
Yes. How are you?
Good, good. Take it away.
So I have a question for Walter regarding replacement windows on homes. Would it be safe to say that like the top three or four manufacturers are like Fenplast, Isothermic, Concerto, and Bioncore? And like Fenplast advertises, or when you go to one of their showrooms, they show you this little container that their PVC is granulated as opposed to other companies. And lastly, hybrid versus PVC. Would it be safe to say it's about 30% more for the hybrid, but is most of the population using PVC? Is it PVC good enough?
Okay, so the quick answer for you would be depends on the wind tunnels you have around your home. Now, you are right, the vast majority do not go with hybrid because of the price. But the PVC versus hybrid, this is strictly on the frame. There's another component if you are looking for energy savings, and this is, is it a double glazed window, a triple glazed window? That also makes a difference on the overall decision. So it's not just the question of am I going with a hybrid or PVC, because that doesn't make this only going to target the area where the frame is. The glass is not going to give you more efficiency. Where you would have, if you are in an area or at least one of the elevations in your home is facing an area which is a wind tunnel or you
not
have
really,
a lot of wind, then that's an area where I would spend my money more on a triple glaze than a hybrid because they're made more efficient. And you will have a lot more glass in a window than you would have frame. So you save, you'll have a better chance of getting better savings that way. The difference between manufacturers, now each one tries to distinguish themselves separately. These are, fairly good companies that you mentioned. The Fenplast talks about the granulated PVC, but then you have Isothermic that talks about the Technifuge that they have, which is patented in between the glass, so you don't have any movement. Most of the Technoform, not Technifuge, sorry, which is between the windows, and it's a patent for them, which they have discovered that does not move with the heat and the cold. Like the other manufacturers, because most of the other manufacturers, that piece is in metal. Isothermic also talks about robotic welding. They promote that a lot in their pitch. They have a double rebar on the hinges. I find that very intelligent. Because a lot of times that's where you have the most weakness, if you wish. So each manufacturer is going to have their own thing to, you know, to promote. Isothermic also talks about the thickness of their frame. They usually promote that they have a thicker frame than all the other competition. So each one is going to come and, you know, give you a different song and dance. At the end of the day, it's really the one that, number one, going to give you the curb appeal. Number two, you need an Energy Star window. And the look as well. So, you know, and which one really maybe talks to you more as far as specifications, because they're not all going to have the same specifications.
So real quick, some offer 1 year guarantee and some offer 5 year guarantee on the work. Would it be safe to say that if there's going to be an issue, it's going to be in the first year? So,
That is incorrect. As far as maybe the efficiency of the glass and what have you, yes. But you have other components that's going to, for example, anything that is hardware, that doesn't usually fail the first year. That usually fails, you know, 2-3 years down the line. In my understanding, and I could be wrong, but from the last time I checked, Isothermic had a lifetime warranty on their windows.
I'm talking about the work, the labor.
Yeah. So the work,
some offers.
Yeah. So you have to be careful with that, because the work itself, the labor, is going to depend on the distributor you're going to hire. So each one is going to, it's not really the Isothermic brand that tells the distributors, well, you're going to be giving 1 year on labor on this and that. Isothermic will give them the material part. And then it's up to them to tell you how many years. I, you know, personally, if I were you, if someone is going to give me 5 years warranty on labor, that I'll take it all day long. Because a lot of time the window have nothing to do with it. Sometimes it's just a question of bad installation, bad measurements. You know.
And you never answer me, Walter, sorry to interrupt, you never answer me about that thing with the powder, the PVC being in powder or not powder. Can you just...
I mean, look...
What is the difference?
It just gives it more solidity to the frame. But having said that, like, all of them have very good... The idea with the frame, to be quite frank with you, it's the, do we have robotic welding or manual assembly? That's where they lose me. When they tell me it's manual assembly, they lose me all day long, because that's where most mistakes happen. You're going to have those microscopic cracks in the frame that will leak air and so on and so forth. It is good. It gives it more solidity to the frame, but are the other frames solid? Yes, they are.
Okay.
Jerry, does that help you out?
Amazing. Thank you very, very much.
All right. Thanks for that, Jerry. I do have a question about this window installation, because we have talked about it a lot on the show.
Yeah.
Because you're always saying you have to be careful because there's so many mistakes that can be made. And then we have bigger problems in terms of how it's put together and the impact on the house. What should you be looking out for when they're installing the windows? Or is it beforehand where you're choosing the right company, but then you should be watching as they're working?
Well, I mean, the installation is as the measurement and the installation is probably as important as the quality of the window.
Mm.
So one of the major issues you see is bad measurement. So either they measure it too tight or they measure it too loose in the frame.
But how can that be? It's a measurement.
I'll tell you why. Because most of the time, the people that take measurements, they take it from the inside.
Okay.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But the accurate way to do it is from the outside.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, they could get it right on 9 out of 10 windows. But, you know, there's this one window that they can get wrong. So, and if they do get it wrong and you see it in the installation that is wrong, that's when you're going to raise a flag and say, look, this is not acceptable. That's way too much gap on the sides. I would like this to be replaced.
Are you able, once it's done, to have them come back if you feel the mistake? Or,
yeah,
depending on the warranty, right?
But they will put a temporary window in the opening and then they'll come back and change it. But I mean, that would be probably the number one thing I would look at is, okay, the measurements, the sizing. Then, yeah, the curb appeal is a big thing. You have to love the window you're installing. It's not just about the quality, because it does change the look of your house.
A lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
So you have to like what you're, you know, and not everybody have the same models and types and designs and colors as well. So that's another important factor. And then research the manufacturers. There are commercial grade manufacturers that are more made for apartment buildings and, you know, lower end windows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not in your home. That, for me, I can tell you right off the bat, it's never going to be a winning formula for you.
We're going to get to the calls. I want to remind everybody, 514-790-0800. I see some callers waiting there. Continue to send in your questions, or call in your questions, I should say, for Walter Assey, president of Renovco. Having a grand old time here on the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey, president of Renovco. 514-790-0800. Excuse me. Send us your texts. Put your name in the text, please, so we know who we're talking to. And the phone calls as well. We have Ron waiting patiently on the line. Ron has an issue or question about French drains. Ron, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Take it away.
Yeah, I've got a question about French drains. I've been told that you don't put the French drain in front of the sloping driveway into the basement.
Okay, so what's the question?
Is that true or not?
Well, I mean, yes, it is in a way, because there's no foundation there that is really underground. So the issue that you have with water coming in through your foundation is really because of hydrostatic pressure. So when you don't have a hydrostatic pressure, because you don't have any earth that is actually touching your foundation, you won't have any issues, or a French drain would not do you much. I mean, you could if you want to, but it doesn't really do any good. You don't have to do it. It doesn't give you any added value whatsoever. What you do need, though, in front of that door, because you have a downslope driveway, is a good linear drain. That's what you really need in order to manage the water that's coming just down from the rain and what have you. So you don't, doing a French drain there is honestly a waste of money.
Okay, because we decided to do our French drains because we had water.
Oh, Ron, we're losing you. Can you try repeating that again, please?
Yeah, we got water in August or in the rainstorm. And only one person that we've had come mentioned not to put it in front of the driveway, but in the garage door where we live in Laval, all the houses, they have a crack over the garage door. And I know that it's cracked there, and I know that it's cracked on the footing, like underneath where the drain goes in to drain the driveway. I'm not sure how we deal with this. You know, they some people, they say hydraulic cement and urethane and epoxy and put bolts in, you know what I mean?
Well, I would do hydraulic cement, yes. You put the rebars, yes. But you don't put epoxy cement. Epoxy cement is stronger than the foundation cement. So yes, it will inject the crack, but it will damage whatever is next to it. So in a few years, you'll see another crack forming next to this crack. That's why we don't use epoxy cement anymore. Hydraulic cement, epoxy is fine. Depending on the size of the crack, okay, a good foundation specialist will tell you this is what we recommend, but that's going to boil down to the size of the crack, the length of the crack, and everything else. But putting a French drain is not going to really be solving for you this issue. And like I said, if you are to hit two birds in the same stone, you would put a nice linear drain to manage the water that's coming there, and that way none of it is going to touch the footing of your garage.
Okay, thank you so much, Ron. I hope that helps you out.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, Natalie has been waiting very patiently. Natalie, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Take it away.
Okay, good morning.
Hi.
I have a flood in my basement, and it's being redone. Putting on a subfloor with vinyl floor and planks. Now, my question is, my basement stairs still has carpet on it, and I want to redo the stairs. Can I use the same flooring on my stairs as I'm using on my floor, or is it completely different material?
So the quick answer would be yes. The only issue that you're going to have will be the fact that you can't have it bullnosed like you would want a stair to be. It will have to be a 90 degree finish. Not really the best of finishes in a stair. I mean, that's the bullnose is the way you want to go. So I would recommend against it.
Okay.
So either go back with carpet for the stairs because it's the least slippery option, or if you don't like that look, I would just go with wood. I would veer away from doing it in vinyl.
Okay. It either has to be wood or carpet kind of thing is what you're telling me. It's the best to get that bullnose because I don't want the straight edge.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, you really have, the good news for you is you only have two options, really. I mean, either you go with the wood or you go with the carpet. And both options will give you the bullnose, you know, for comfort. And also as a finish, to be quite frank with you, I don't really like the finish that a straight edge does. Specifically in vinyl, what you're doing is you're literally just installing it as if you would install a floor on the step, and you're just finishing the edges. So you'd never get to have this beautiful finish that you would have with the bullnose option.
Okay, that's great. Well, now that I know, I can start looking for wood for my stairs.
And what I can tell you as well, if you're doing wood, you just bring with you a sample of the of the vinyl floor to the paint shop, and they can match the stain. So you can have it look like a set, because a good quality vinyl flooring will look like a wood floor. Okay, so by you doing so, you can have, you know, by matching it to the wood, to the vinyl that you have, it looks like it's all been planned out at the same time.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
All right, Natalie. Stay. There's lots of people on the phone, on the line right now. Stay on the line. I just want to get to a quick question here from a texter. Hi, Joanne. Love the show. Question for Walter. I've decided to put vinyl flooring in my basement that had regular floating floor that was damaged in the flood. Question, am I putting the vinyl planks directly onto that smooth level cement? Is that okay? And what thickness am I using? Also, the total square area, the area is approximately 600 square feet. Do you have an idea of cost? So first, does it go directly on the cement? How thick should it be? And what is the cost? That comes to us from Mike.
So you're going to have many things to look at when you're dealing with vinyl floors. It is a better product than floating floors, laminate floors.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a more finicky product.
How so?
It needs a level cement floor. And if you don't have that, it will separate. So the first thing you want to do is look at the level of your slab. Put a laser through it, look if it's really nice and level. If not, you would have to do a self-leveling beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Really strongly suggest that. So that would be the number one thing. Now, as far as thicknesses, they start from 6 mil, they go all the way to 12 mil. It doesn't really make a difference, to be quite frank with
it's
you.
It's not like the thinner, the more it sticks, or no?
No, it's not that, because it doesn't stick. Usually, these are floating vinyls.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so you don't have to stick them, and they're reusable. The only difference is, if you have a flood and you want to reuse it, the thicker vinyl have usually a better tongue and groove, more solid tongue and groove. So if you can unclick it and re-click it, so it's less flimsy. Okay.
And cost-wise?
Cost-wise, it's anywhere from $1.50. It can go all the way up to $3.85. So that it's a big range because there's a lot of manufacturers and there's a lot of different options. You can have some of them with a cork backing, and that answers this question. Because of the cork backing, you don't need to put any membrane. Others have a rubberized backing, which also does not require necessarily a membrane underneath. You could if you want to, but you don't have to. So that's why you will have a variety of options, variety of thicknesses, variety of lengths. You have the solid core ones, you have the softer ones. There's many, many different options. But the short answer would be, yes, you could put it right on the floor. Make sure it's leveled.
Okay. Send those questions in via text 514-790-0800. We've got two calls to get to. Stay on the line. the Home Improvement Show. I'm Joanne Brackus. Walter Assey, president of Renofco, is here taking your questions. 514-790-0800, the text line and the phone line. Let's get to the phones. Dave. Dave has a question about something called masticating pumps. I don't even know what that means, and it sounds very strange to me. Dave, can you hear us?
Me?
Yes. Masticating pumps. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, and I'll explain it for you. It's a little gross, but we'll get into it. But first, I want to just acknowledge that Walter is a gem.
And I know it.
And we're so lucky to know him and be able to speak to him. And I think he should be nationally syndicated.
Oh, well, we're working on it. We are working on it, Dave. We're working on it.
Good on you. I'm in support. So basically, a quick background. I live in a Hudson home. When we were flooded in 2017, I wasn't impacted by overland river flooding, but the water table flooded my house. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. Found out there were no French drains. So we installed French drains and then a masticating pump. So we're into the masticating pump. There are no drains in my basement. So I have a masticating pump. I want to know how often it should be cleaned because I run mostly my washing machine through it. But I also want to know about how to drain my hot water tank or clean my hot water tank. And should I run that sludge from my hot water tank through the masticating pump?
Before you answer that, what is a masticating pump?
It's the stuff that your toilet flushes. When you're below grade, the masticating pump turns it into, let's call it
other things. Okay, I understand.
Flushes it up above ground and out into the town sewers.
Gotcha. Okay, Walter?
The quick answer would be once a year minimum, you have to clean that pump. The fact that you drain the washer, technically you're not supposed to do that, but the fact that you do that in it, you would have to, I would say, do it twice a year just because of that soap and the scum that it actually creates the film. That could eventually lead for it to clog. So I would do it twice a year.
Walter, You're telling me that my washer should not have been hooked up to the masticating pump. So where should that washer go?
I mean, you have the bathroom and the you have the toilet, the shower, and okay.
And so the sink and
Let me reverse this 2 seconds.
Okay.
What's the size of the pump? Have there been a study put on the size of the how much that because they come in different sizes, right?
Well, when I watched the gentleman install it, and yeah. I can tell you that the pit would be big enough to hold a washing machine. Okay. The masticating pump itself would be as big as the drum on a large washing machine. The drum.
So that's fine. That's fine because I've seen them. You know, I've seen that installed in smaller capacities, and there was problems. That's why
he told me it was the biggest one.
Okay, that's good. All right, so having said that, I would say, I would say once a year is usually the average. Twice okay. if you feel that you use it more often, you know, usually because these types of, they're in basements and they're not often used, so you don't have to do it as much. But if you use it frequently, I would say twice a year.
Okay, that's great. I live alone, so, I'm not too worried about that. Again, what about flushing my hot water heater?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Can it go through the pump?
It's regular water, so, yeah, you could do that. Technically, you have no other choice, unfortunately, unless you want to hook it to a hose and put it to the outside. But technically, yeah you could do that once a year. Again, it's that's what's
okay.
recommended.
Okay, Dave.
So, Walter, should I bother flushing the hot water heater at all? I mean, they're good for 10 years, and then they throw them away.
Every now and then, it's good to flush it. Usually, again, they tell you once a year, but I would say you don't have to as much if you're alone. So maybe once every 2 years should suffice.
Delighted to talk to you, my friend.
Thank you, Dave. Have a great one. We have Scott on the line. Scott has a question about construction company mistakes. Scott, can you hear us?
I can.
Take it away.
Excuse me, just clear my voice. Good morning.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, so two-part question. I'll try to keep it quick so that you can keep rolling. I was part of the flood on August 8th. Got about 3 feet of water in the basement. They came to a company owned by an insurance company. I won't name the name of the companies. They started the work. They did a test. They said they found asbestos. So they went to do the abatement of the asbestos, which all seemed completely normal to me to that time. So they sealed off the area of the basement. I live in a split-level home, so the stairs that run to the basement are open to the kitchen upstairs and then to the rest of the house. After they finished the abatement of the asbestos, I had to go in through the garage because the door to upstairs was sealed. Once I opened the sealed door, I realized that they had smashed up the floor on the sealed side, but they missed about 2 square feet on the open side of my house. And because they had smashed up the floor on the other side, it broke that floor and there was dust all over it. I understand that dust is the only thing that can cause issue with asbestos if you breathe it. So the two-part question is, the company told me there's nothing to worry about. They rushed some people over and they cleaned it up. And the second part of it is that they increased the cost after that about $10,000 for the rebuild. They just gave me a price without a quote. And when I asked them for the explanation of the details, they said, well, you can get a cash out from your insurer. Again, I had no information on the price.
Oh,
so
boy.
First of all, my question is just, should I worry anything about the asbestos having been open for two-ish months on the other side? Is that a big miss from the asbestos company? And, you know, is this, I feel I'm in the wrong, I'm been wronged by them increasing a price without even giving me a detailed quote. And then they're just telling me to cash out. So I don't quite understand what they're doing.
Okay.
I hope that's not too long.
It's going to be a long answer. So
and I know that. I'll let you start it. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back to Scott.
We're going to have to come back for it because it's...
But
it's
you can start. Start.
Yeah. It's important because, you know, your issue, unfortunately, is a very common issue. Not just about the asbestos, but about the whole experience. That company you've named, I know exactly who they are. And
I've
heard a lot of horror stories. Hmm. We're not going to go into the details, but yes. So the as far as asbestos, my first question would be, where did they find the asbestos?
Because they said it was in the glue of the flooring and in the gyprock. The house was made in 1969.
Okay, so that makes it very friable. That makes it high risk. So you're technically right to worry about the dust, the secondary dust that flew somewhere else outside the zone, because that is typically a contaminated asbestos dust.
Yeah. So we need to take a teensy-weensy break. Stay on the line. And we've got another caller as well. We're going to come back with all of your answers. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. Scott is still on the line. He'd started to get some of the answer to his question for Walter, where they've discovered some asbestos, right? Is that where we were at, Scott?
Yeah, and then there was actually asbestos on the other side of the sealed area, which I didn't see because it was at the bottom of the stairs and I didn't go down. I think Walter understood he was about to start his answer.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you for the recap.
Dream team.
So, yeah, Scott. Basically, what should have happened is they should have done an air quality test on the affected zone and then give you the all clear in this case. So they probably just came, they cleaned it, this and that, and the other thing. That's fine. They should have done that. Okay, I understand. but you need also, you would have needed a clean bill of health, that there was no friable asbestos fibers in the air, because that's the issue with asbestos, is when it gets airborne. So that you could always circle back, do it, or you could do it yourself. Maybe even, you know, get the adjuster to accept it, to accept the cost. And I would even, if I were you, choose my own company to do it, just because you want something to be objective.
Okay.
You know, they could do swabs as well. So they could swab the area, and then they can do an air quality test in the area, just to give you the all clear that there's no asbestos fibers in the air. So that would be the number one thing I would do in this case. Having said that, the other part of the medallion is
the increasing costs without an itemized quote.
100%. So
is that allowed?
Definitely.
That's what I was rather upset about, and just I honestly couldn't believe they just sent it to the insurance and said cash out, and didn't want to tell me. They haven't even told me how much they charged me so far.
Oh boy,
it's a large insurance company, and they were.
I know exactly who you're talking about, and you're absolutely right. So definitely you would need to have. There's a couple of things you cannot, especially when you are capped with insurance. If they come to you from day one and say, okay, doing X, Y, and Z is going to cost you that much, that's it. That's like upfront. You accepted it. You signed it. It's a done deal. It's a fixed price. But when they start giving it to you as if it's an open buffet and they can charge whatever they want, then there's something to be said, specifically if they are charging you to correcting their own mistake. So that is actually ridiculous. So you should definitely document this. You should definitely send an email all about this. You should challenge what the insurance company tell you. Not, you know, you're there to protect your interests. They're there to protect theirs. A lot of insurers are honest about things. Sometimes, you know, things do not go as smoothly. But what you have to do is get your version of events, get your own estimates, have an objective opinion on the other side of defense. If they're going to pay you X amount of dollars, they have to back up what they're paying you. They can't just tell you, look, I guesstimate this at $20,000. No, it doesn't work like that. How did you arrive to that figure? And if they don't want to show you how, because technically, believe it or not, they can, because the proof of loss in an insurance situation is the responsibility of the insured, not the insurance company. So you have to prove your loss to them, not the other way around. So then that's okay. When you take the bull by the horn and you say, you know what, I'm going to get my own contract, I'm going to get my own estimates, and then you start presenting them. And it's then if they're going to challenge something in those estimates, they could.
But I guess they have to justify why.
They have to justify why, yeah. And you have to be convinced by that that justification. It's not a dictated settlement. That's very important, Scott. Mm. They cannot dictate a settlement for you. It's a negotiated settlement. That's the key.
Okay, so I guess just last note quick, because I know you guys got to go move on. So they did give me $30,000, the insurance. Now it's well over. They gave me an initial quote, which was much lower than closer to $40,000 and above. Mm-hmm. And then they gave me, he sent me an email with just a one-line number, no quote. So basically you're saying recourse is send email, contact the insurer. They can't just charge me that. I can challenge with the insurance.
Yes.
And I should get an independent asbestos company to verify the air upstairs that was outside the sealed area. I imagine I should redo it in the sealed area as well.
Well, exactly. I mean, they should have given you also an air quality testing in the sealed area. They should have already done that at the end of the job. I would do it also in the area exactly where you saw the dust. So that's where I would put my cartridge and test the air in that particular area first and foremost.
Thank you for your call, Scott. Thanks so much for taking the time. Jim, do we have time for one last call? Yeah, Janice has been waiting patiently. Janice, we've saved the best for last. We don't have that much time left, so take it away.
Thank you, Walter. My house is 45 years old. When we had the big storm, my sump pump worked fine. I had no water damage at all. My question is, should I be looking at upgrading my sump pump? It's the original one. Maybe it's a quarter horsepower. I do not have a backup. What would you say? Should I go to one horsepower?
So, I mean, at least 3/4 of a horse. Like, 1/4 horsepower is nothing. It's very, that will be like really the basic that you can buy. With the way our weather pattern has been changing with global warming and everything else, we're going to be more prone to these crazy storms, which is going to flood our French drain systems. And it's going to, you know, you hear about people telling you, my sump pump never ever worked before. It's the first time in 20 years I hear it work. Because the weather patterns are changing. We are seeing it. So definitely have that upgraded. Don't wait for it to break down, because if it's old, there's a possibility of it breaking down as well. Put at least 3/4 horsepower. The more, the better. But more importantly, if I were you, I would invest in a battery-powered backup pump. Because with this crazy weather patterns, we're having a lot of electrical failures and, power outages. And that is the key. It's, 3/4 or 1 horsepower with no electricity is not going to serve you much. So if you are going to do investment, I would say upgrade your principal pump and ask your plumber to add you a battery-powered pack pump, because that will last you 6 to 12 hours and will buy you a very crucial time in a case of a storm with a power outage.
Okay, great. So you say a plumber can handle everything.
Correct.
Yeah, but thank you very much, Walter.
They're going to probably try to push on you the water-powered pumps. The problem with these pumps, they don't pump enough.
Oh, is that right? That was my other question.
It's easier to install. They like to push it on you. It is still considered a power, if you want another type of a backup, but it's not as strong as a battery-powered one.
Thank you for that call, Janice.
Thank you.
All right, Walter, you hear that?
Yes,
I do. That's the music for us to stop talking. But we'll be back next weekend for another edition of the Home Improvement Show. I'm back tomorrow on CJAD 800 with another edition of Weekends with Joanne Brakas.